Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black polyamorous feminist ho living in New York City, and
me, Rob, one pansexual. Pay me, bitch.
That's kind of a funny thing.
Pansexual, agender feminist ho. Wait, with a fatty. I forgot that important aspect.
I was like, that's missing something. And it's Akua, one intersectional feminist who specializes in all things mental health and carefree, and I'm tired.
As I mentioned earlier, my name is Sam. I'm the principal host of this here show. That means that week in and week out, I am here with one of three rotating co-hosts, and then on very special weeks, we all come together, like this week, except for Rodeca, who couldn't be here, but today we, of course, have Rob and Akua, and this is Rob's last group recording.
Yes. I mean, not yes. That sounds like,
niggas is
like
excited
I'm
hyped.
I'm hype. Trying to make
peace
this money.
Peace out. This is season four of the Inner Ho Uprising podcast. And if you're a new listener to this here show, we have a few segments here for you. They are as follows.
Bay of the Week.
Which is where we talk about people who we find attractive.
Ho of the Week.
Where we shout out you guys, the homies, the listeners.
Self-care tip of the week.
Where we give you guys some advice on how to take care of yourselves.
Pay a ho.
Where we beg for money that we desperately need.
Fuck that.
Our current event segment, which we are skipping this week because February is a very special Black History Month programmed month for the Inner Ho Uprising.
Fuck it.
Which is our topic of the day. And today we are speaking about women in the COINTELPRO era.
Fuck me.
Which is where we talk about our sexual, romantic, and dating lives, which is going to be skipped for this whole month.
And fuck you.
Which is where we talk about your sexual, romantic, and dating lives, which is also going to be skipped. But in March, we ready for those stories, boy.
Going to be backlogged.
Backlogged with back shots, am I right?
So if you guys would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoUprising so we can see it and the hashtag Podden so other people can see it.
Mm-hmm. If you want to pay us to speak at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this show, we would love to do so. So please to book us, send us a line to ichewpodcast@gmail.com. What is our first segment?
Bay of the Week.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, I'm the only one that chose one. So. We'll make this quick. So
this week, we are doing a special themed historic Bay of the Week.
Of course, yes. My Bay of the Week is Audley Queen Mother Moore. She's a lifelong international radical activist and black nationalist with ties to a lot of progressive and radical organizations throughout black history, spanning 60 years from the 30s to the 90s. She was based in New York. During the Great Depression, she organized black workers for economic justice. During the 40s and 50s, she supported black soldiers and veterans, as well as black poor and working class black women who were being victimized by the state. In the 60s, after 30 years of being a seasoned organizer, she began mentoring younger budding activists, including members of the Black Panther Party. She was the founder of a lot of organizations, the Universal Association of Ethiopian Women, the Committee for Reparations for Descendants of U.S. Slaves, founding member of the Republic of New Africa, and a lot of her work was stemmed in getting us our reparations, our 40 acres and our meal.
Nice.
She was given a chieftaincy-style title of Queen Mother, which she went by in 1972 by my people, the Ashanti people in Ghana, when she was there. And she passed away in 1997 at the age of 99 in Brooklyn.
Sheesh.
Well, black people live forever, fam.
Especially when you're doing good work, sometimes, mm-hmm. sometimes.
What's our next segment? It's Ho of the Week. Who are our hoes?
Our Ho of the Weeks are Earlene S., Ty G., Kimberly B., Intelligent AJ, Danielle H., who is at Cupcake Tellum, who's always a cool hive.
Sucking your dick, basically.
Yeah. cool hive. They paid us, okay?
Shout out to all these people for paying a hoe. Self-care tip of the week.
Duh, go see Black Panther, y'all. The fuck? If you ain't seen it, go see it. If you seen it, go see it again.
Facts.
What's the second self-care tip of the week?
So one thing that I have been starting to do in my journey to leaving, to alleviate some stress, is cleansing during the moon phases. Okay. So when we have that super, super duper blood moon,
Blood moon, blue moon.
Super blue blood moon. Yeah. There you go. Some extreme like crip blood shit.
Wait, wasn't he like set tripping?
OD set tripping. but he was super, so it was like, okay, I'm not going to press my son.
Maybe he was like the god of both of them.
Like an OG. Super OG. Superior OG.
Like the OG of the bloods and the crips was a moon. And it was super. So I went and I bought some crystals specific to things that I wanted to take care of, like less stress and getting rid of negative energy and finding peace within myself. And so I tried to watch the moon. That was impossible because New York is fucking stupid for astrological events. Mm-hmm. But I watched it on NASA.
Yeah, fucking nerd. You should live stream it.
Yes, of course. It was like they had this like really weird synthesized music playing in the background, very calming. I cleaned my apartment and I laid out the crystals and I did like a sage cleanse and I just really sat at home and just chilled. And the next day I felt a billion times better. Like I felt like I could move forward and I'm like, cool. Well, the moon has phases all the time. And it's not like it's a hard thing to do. Granted, you might not want to be, well, I can't be burning sage and shit while I'm overseas, mm-hmm. but I can still focus and do my own cleanse, sans mm-hmm. herbs. Mm-hmm. Cool. So, you know, that's go cool. research. There's a whole lot of research on cleansing during moon phases.
Thank you for that. Finally, we have Payaho. If you would like to help sustain the Inner Ho Uprising podcast monetarily, you can do so by going to innerhouprising.com, clicking the tab Payaho. You can also go directly to paypal.me/innerho, which does the same thing. It takes you to our PayPal. If you would like to buy a cool hoodie or t-shirt, you can click the merchandise tab on innerhouprising.com. You can also now support a ho on a monthly basis by subscribing to us on Patreon and receive perks while you're doing it. This is an easy way to throw some dollars monthly towards the show because studios, transportation, and events ain't cheap. And as you can see, every episode is not sponsored. If you're able and you'd be so kind, you can visit our Patreon, which is patreon.com/innerhouprising, and donate $2, which will give you access to private ISU gatherings like Rob's going away party. It's a pretty sweet deal, man. And also you will get our undying love and affection. And for the price of $5 a month, you can get all that as well as
and
access.
My soul.
Oh no.
Nah.
That's just the Kua soul. That's not my soul. I don't have one to give. You can receive all that and access to some exclusive behind the scenes video content. Perfect for people who want to see me change my tampon on screen. I did that last week.
My menstrual cup, I will change.
Wait,
my menstrual
you said
cup
you
on
did
screen.
That?
I'm lying.
Oh my God, yeah. Don't do that. You know I'd be taking you wild seriously. Like when you said
she
you felt
no
the KKK member
voice.
Or something like
that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you would know
it's
that
all a lie. It's all a
if you watch a live
lie.
Show on Patreon.
Exactly. Yes.
You can see my reaction.
Yes. So you can donate less or more. So anything from a $1 a month to a zillion dollars a month is greatly appreciated. This is just a more consistent way to pay a hoe, pretty much spending what you would at a vending machine or what's something equivalent to it. It's pretty much spending what you would at your bodega
store, yeah.
stop. Yeah.
It is one bacon, egg, and cheese with two eggs and a wrap.
And a free coffee.
They'd be giving out free coffee?
Yeah, a little. Come on.
I never knew that.
Or it's actually equivalent to two slices of dollar pizza and the soda.
True.
Mm. Like, come on.
It's like
equivalent
three,
to a $5 box at Popeye's.
This is three bonafide thought juices, right? Basically.
That is, it is one thought juice.
Is it a
not the
no.
tall can, the small
can. $5?
Oh,
that's
the little,
like three.
Okay.
Three
but it's one Four Loko.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is one Four Loko a month to help us.
Are people
come on.
Too nasty.
Come on. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Let's that's get into the actual show. Weekend. That's a party on the weekend. She loves a party on the weekend. She loves a party on the weekend. Our first and only segment for this episode is
Fuck It!
Our topic of the day, and we're talking about women's imprisonment in the COINTELPRO era.
Mm-hmm.
A little background about this. This was our friend Rob's, our friend.
Damn,
relegated
them
weird.
To a guest.
I'm sorry.
That's just fine.
This is our guest. This is some nigga off the street, Rob.
Y'all interviewing me.
This is the actual black Rob. Like, where
whoa.
Has he been? Like, whoa, like, oh, like, no, like, COINTELPRO.
Oh! Bitch, you got bars!
When your friends gas you and you ain't shit.
We the hype
and then you
man,
go out
we
into the actual
man.
World, like, I am shit. And the world's like, no,
nah, you're not shit.
That was not bars.
You didn't hear my Cornetel Pro rap, though.
So this was Rob's idea for a Black History Month episode. And I feel like this is kind of near and dear to you.
Yes.
Stomp as shit.
When I was in college, that's when I found out about COINTELPRO in my, like your introduction to politics class?
Mm-hmm. I didn't take one of those.
Yeah, it was just like a politics 101, like very basic class. My professor, probably low-key a communist.
A lot of CUNY professors are.
But he, the way that he taught us was, he taught us like the basic stuff. Like, here's what you probably learned in like high school, and here's what really goes on. And he taught us about COINTELPRO, and I guess I was surprised. Like, I just didn't know that. I knew things like that happened and were happening, but I didn't know that there were documents to substantiate that. Mm-hmm. So when you try to research it, though, you constantly find out about men. So mm-hmm. you find out about Martin Luther King, you find out about Malcolm X, you find out about Huey Newton, you find out about John Huggins, but you don't find out about the women mm-hmm. who are affected, women who are still or just recently, like in the very recent 10 years, got out of prison, who were falsely imprisoned due to this. So, I mean, we got a show. We got some feminist hoes, mm-hmm. so we out here shedding
black
light.
Feminist hoes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, black, more importantly, black. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Can I add to that?
Yes.
Because when you were saying that, I realized the first time I heard about COINTELPRO was my senior year in college, and I was taking an African-American music elective, and it was about... it was about rap. It was about hip hop, the beginnings of hip hop. And that's when I learned about it in a book about rap.
Isn't that crazy?
Nigga.
You like, find out. Just think random.
Like, wait a minute.
It's mm-hmm. like, you have something to do with this?
And it's actually, I was telling Sam before, it ties into the episode of last week about Women in the Black Panther.
Yes.
And that in that book, she had a chapter, I believe chapter 4, entitled Targeting Black Women. And it spoke briefly about the women that were targeted yes. by the FBI and their tactics.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we will get into some of those yes. women.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what COINTELPRO is, and we do not judge you because this is not apparently. Something that you learn in yeah. your dad's history class.
well, maybe Sam's dad's history class.
Maybe.
I think my dad is the person who told me what
COINTELPRO is. Oh, damn. Was, see you win. So COINTELPRO, it actually stands for Counterintelligence Program, shortened. It is a covert, or was rather, a covert and often illegal series of projects aimed at surveilling, infiltrating, discrediting, and disrupting domestic political organizations. It was initially created in 1956 to disrupt communists in America, but the chief of the FBI, Federal Bureau of Intelligence, mm-hmm. J. Edgar Hoover, he justified surveillance of black leaders by saying the movement was infiltrated by communists. Which it wasn't like infiltrated by communists. Black people also happen to be communists.
Black people cannot be multiple things.
Oh, yeah, facts. We learned that in Black Panther.
You cannot be. He's Wakandan. No, he's one of ours.
What?
Like, can people not migrate?
Nah.
Oh, yeah. Dual citizenship? No, not a thing.
No. The people who were targeted were civil rights activists, people in the Black Panther Party, Puerto Rican independence groups such as the Young Lords, anti-Vietnam activists, environmental activists, and feminist organizations. And with the environmental activists, I definitely did not realize how much the FBI hated environmental activism. Oh, but they did.
Oil is important, man.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of political prisoners who were environmental activists. Hmm. So one of the, or two of the most notable victims of COINTELPRO, one, Martin Luther King Jr.
Cheating ass nigga. Every time I hear his name, I just hear Sam's voice saying that.
This is
and that will forever change my life. I'm sorry.
But shout out to him for not giving into COINTELPRO because he's like, y'all can expose me as a cheating ass nigga.
I'm still going to dip my dick in these civil rights baddies.
Yes.
Well, essentially the FBI... they mailed a package called like a suicide package. Mm. And it had, they were bugging people's rooms. So they bugged his hotel room. He was having these sexual indiscretions.
A tryst, one might say.
Tryst, yes, yes. Tryst. No, it's tryst. Oh, okay, it's fine. Tryst is. Triscuits. So they mailed these audio recordings as well as letters urging him to commit suicide, saying, you know, if you don't commit suicide, we will release these recordings. So do it before you accept your Nobel Peace Prize. He wasn't going to do that. Mm-hmm. I know that after he died, the COINTELPRO effort was still aimed at discrediting him as a leader because his death, you know, still fueled a lot more mm-hmm. civil rights activism. Clearly didn't work because now we have a whole Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
Sorry,
FBI. Can't beat him. Let that go.
And then the other person was Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. So, you know, quote unquote, the FBI wasn't directly involved in his murder, as in an FBI agent did not murder him, mm-hmm. but they were involved by widening rifts. That's what they do. It's like that divide and conquer kind of thing. So they would mail letters to different leaders, kind of saying, this person said this and this person said this, to get them to distrust each other.
We were, not to cut you off, but we were talking about that last week with Robin, how when Newton, is his name? Huey Newton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I keep, dyslexia just makes me keep switching it.
Newton.
When he was in jail and he wrote a letter about accepting the LGBTQ community mm-hmm. and the FBI sent letters to Black Panther Party members and was like, how y'all feel about this? He's talking about accept them gay niggas. Mm-hmm.
Y'all see Huey over here?
Exactly.
Is this nigga gay?
To widen the rifts again. Continue, yes. I'm sorry.
No, that's cool. The FBI exclusively, you know, they widened the rift between Malcolm and Elijah Muhammad. And that was like sparking debates, rumor mongering, fostering internal disputes, which ultimately led to his assassination. Mm-hmm. So I won't even gas you. Me looking into this, I was like, damn. I feel really weird researching this because I feel like I just hit a ping on the FBI's server and they're like, damn, I'm about to follow this bitch around.
Wasn't that me yesterday when I saw the documents, those COINTELPRO PDFs, and I was like, Sam, I don't know if I can like hit this. They might show up here.
I mean, it was the first search on Google.
Because it's public. Yeah. It had to be made public, especially mm-hmm. after it was exposed. Well, let me get into that. Mm-hmm. By the way, this was from 1956 to 1971 after his exposure. After his exposure, it was disbanded. The actual project was disbanded, but mm-hmm. the tactics are very much still used. Mm-hmm. We definitely have extreme surveillance on political activists, political groups. We still demonize certain groups and angelize other groups mm-hmm. With the Black identity extremists. Mm-hmm.
The fuck is that?
It's nobody.
Exactly.
But apparently that's a Black Lives Matter. We're Black identity extremists. Okay, that's cute. And this happened in America. But, you know, they use these activists when they were going to other countries and participating in communist rallies. When they would come home, they would have investigations because they went to France or they went to Germany or went to this. They would come home to people in their homes. So it was discovered by accident. Love the way the world works. The Citizens Commission to Investigate the FBI, which is a group, they burgled the FBI field office in Pennsylvania. And they stole several dossiers. And they weren't looking for COINTELPRO because it was very covert. Like, seriously, people didn't know about it. They knew they had informants. They knew they were being watched. But mm-hmm. they didn't know that there was a whole full-scale project outlining everything ever. So when they stole it and they read it, they were like, oh, shit, we struck gold. They tried to distribute it to the media. But for a while, the media didn't want any parts of it because mm-hmm. that is a very big thing to expose. Like, you're fucking with, like, the federal government.
Isn't that, like, treason?
No.
Or like,
you can still get killed.
Yes, you can still get killed, but it technically wouldn't be treason because this is illegal surveillance. It's illegal surveillance, and it wasn't just surveillance. This went as far as murder, which is documented. Mm-hmm. False imprisonment. So it's like, it was definitely like extremely unconstitutional. So after those initial documents were released, which was like a fraction of the actual documents, Carl Stern, an NBC correspondent, filed a lawsuit against the FBI in order for them to release more documents. And that's when it became a very large scaled investigation into COINTELPRO. That's when the world found out about it.
Another tangent, but I was doing something the other day and the thought or something like it was like, the only way to do stuff is to like sue in America. And it's like, I don't remember, it was something minuscule. I was like, we just got to sue for it. And it's like, every time that comes up, it's like the only way to get something. Oh no, I think I was thinking about the Florida shootings and I was like, all the survivors should sue the government to push, you know, gun control, because that's the only way they'll respond once we start suing. They don't care about our protests and our walkouts. Like, you just have to sue people.
Yes. Yeah. Civil suits. Yeah. They definitely work, because you may not win in the regular court, but you might win in civil court. Mm-hmm. Okay. So.
But not even money, just like forwarding your agendas and movements. Like.
Yeah.
Suing to get these documents released wasn't about money. It was about releasing these documents.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. I don't know. I can't tell you why he did that, though.
Because he knows that's the only way the American government
works.
Yeah,
but I'm saying, like, this is a white man. So I don't know his motivations to do is what I mean. Mm-hmm. But yes, it did work. It was definitely exposed. And it's not like they use, like, code names. Like, these people's names were directly in these documents.
What do you mean, the people working for the FBI?
The people who they were targeting, they had a lot of informants within these groups, embedded in these groups that were Black and Latinx. So you couldn't really trust people in general. So people were very apprehensive about who they spoke to, but it didn't really work because a lot of these efforts did work to kill these political leaders and to imprison these political leaders. People are still being sent to jail within still the recent decade, being sent to jail because of things that have happened during the COINTELPRO era, even though it was super unconstitutional. I don't know if this was ever actually ruled unconstitutional. I think it was just dissolved.
You know, someone had to explain to me that their informants were like people of color.
Yes.
Because when I first learned about it, I was like, wouldn't it be weird when a white man just showed up at a Black Panther meeting?
Nope.
And one of my classmates were like, they were Black. And I was like,
and then,
nigga.
On that note,
Black people.
They had like some of these people were arrested for like minor drug charges and like minor charges, and they had that over their head, and that's why these informants were even working for the FBI in the first
place. It was a bribe, coercion, intimidation. But that would, like, they call the FBI like the Federal Bureau of Intimidation, because they intimidated a lot of these people. But then also there were just some people who were just like, I'm with the shits.
Martin Luther King. He fucked my wife. That's my only contribution to this episode, by the way. Just making Martin Luther King jokes. Because I don't know much about this. I'm sorry, guys.
Okay. We appreciate that. Lighten the mood, because this isn't a very light thing to talk about. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
So that is a basic history of COINTELPRO. So the first person that we want to talk about is Assata Shakur. No, we're not talking about Tupac. So get that shit out of your fucking head.
That's Afeni,
mom.
Afeni Shakur. No, Assata.
No. And this was like Tupac's god mom or step aunt or whatever, but we still not talking about that. It's the only time I mentioned that, and now it's a dub. Thank you. And really, the thing about Assata Shakur is that when you Google her, it fucking Tupac shows up. And it's like, yo, I appreciate you. Not like the initial, it's like not the initial, but like if when you Google Assata Shakur in the FBI, like, I swear to God, it was like a Tupac file.
There are three people here. Mutulu Shakur, Angela Davis, and Tupac Shakur.
But yeah, it's not who I was asking for.
I'm so tired.
You know, the thing is, too, you can't necessarily control F COINTELPRO documents. Mm-hmm. But I don't think her name, a lot of names weren't directly mentioned in it. It was people around them. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that she definitely was affected, which you'll find out soon. So, you know, basic history, her name was Joanne Byron Chesimard. After a brief marriage, she kept her
surname.
They also say maternal name.
Maiden name.
there you go. No, the maiden name's the other one. It's her name after marriage. Yes. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Fuck that nigga. She broke up with him. So shout out to her. She was born in Jamaica, New York. Yeah. And she was raised between New York and North Carolina. So like many activists, she went to college. So she went to BMCC. And while a student, that's when she became a student activist. Mm-hmm. So she participated in rent strikes, anti-war demonstrations, sit-ins, protesting racial injustices. So through college, she became radicalized, essentially. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, if you didn't know, most activists became like that in college, mm-hmm. Because college is a gateway to everything.
Most people, honestly.
Yeah, you take it's that like, first political science class.
Seriously. That shit opens some doors. But really, it's like college is a lot more unrestricted than high school learning. You have the freedom to really learn. And these, it's like you would think they wouldn't hire like Angela Davis as a professor. You know, like it's very strict. Karinga's a fucking professor. You can learn anything if you really want to. You can learn about torturing women and Kwanzaa at the same time.
Not to laugh, but
I'm sorry.
The irony.
I know. It's so feminism. That's what he. Anyway, fuck Karinga. So she began going by Asada, which means she who struggles, and Shakur, which means thankful. After graduation, she like declared that I'm an African woman, mm-hmm. and I don't want to go by my slave name. Then she briefly joined the Black Panther Party in Oakland, California, mm-hmm. And she returned to New York and became a key member of the Black Panther Party's Harlem chapter. Mm-hmm. So she helped organize and staff the free breakfast program for community children, mm-hmm. which was like really sweet reading about her experiences doing so, how kids would like fake steal food because mm-hmm. they didn't have food at home. And she's like, no, you can take as much as you want. Take some for your family, take some for your mom. And she had to wake up at like 4:30 in the morning. She hated it. But then after a while, she's like, this is really important. And if I don't show up, these kids won't eat. Mm-hmm. And she also oversaw the planning of a free clinic and coordinated member healthcare, first aid, and community outreach. So she was very active mm-hmm. in her short time in the Black Panther Party. But because of surveillance and harassment, like one day she was reading the newspaper and she saw her face in Yikes. The Daily News. Like, oh shit. There were a lot of talks about her being arrested for a robbery and her being arrested for this and that and things that she probably didn't do. Mm-hmm. So she went underground. Mm-hmm. And going underground is essentially falling off the grid, not being seen in public, not associating with other activists and your family in order to keep them safe. And that was literally just to keep her out of jail. So when she did that, she joined the Black Liberation Army. Similar in its stance, but more militant. They would arm themselves and physically fight back against police. Mm-hmm. They would rob certain institutions. Black Liberation Army, it consisted a lot of former Black Panther members mm-hmm. and people who've gone underground to escape criminal charges and FBI repression. And I mean, that was like the focus of that was armed struggle. Mm. The part that the Black Panther, like the part that they left off, the Black Liberation Army picked back up. So with her being a part of that, it made it easier for the FBI to get charges brought on her because mm-hmm. of her affiliation with them. So in 1973, there was a shootout on the New Jersey Turnpike and she was arrested after being wounded. And the shootout killed a police officer and killed her longtime friend, Zaid Shakur. Mm-hmm. And so she was charged with murder, attempted murder, armed robbery, bank robbery, and kidnapping. Mm-hmm. So three charges were dismissed. Three charges she was acquitted of, but she was convicted in the murder of the police officer as well as seven other felonies. Mm-hmm. So
did she actually kill the police officer?
No. I'll get into that, but no, because, all right, let me just say this. So she was shot mm-hmm. in the arm. It instantly paralyzed her arm. And she did have a lot of evidence, like a lot of experts coming into the courtroom saying that she had her hands up. Mm-hmm. And the way that the bullet, like it struck her clavicle, there was no way that she can fire a weapon. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that her hands were up. Mm-hmm. So she didn't actually kill an officer. But at this time, it was more like if you were involved in any way, they would charge you anyway. Mm-hmm. More like guilty by association.
Mm-hmm. Wait, I'm sorry. Was the officer killed during the struggle?
Killed during the shootout. There was no struggle.
The shootout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm saying, okay. That's what you're saying. Like, it was a struggle.
No, I know it wasn't a struggle. I meant the confrontation with the police. That was when the officer was killed.
Yes.
So okay. Who killed him?
Probably the police.
No. There was another person. I forgot his first name, but it was like Akolai. Mm-hmm. They killed the police mm-hmm. officer. They actually fired the weapon, mm-hmm. but Asada was still implicated mm-hmm. because she was such a powerful leader. Mm-hmm. You want to get the leaders off the street. Mm-hmm. The thing about this trial, which when you read about other political prisoners, and I don't want to say that other political prisoners like Angela Davis were more favored, but they had more power, as in when they found the issue, like they were being convicted by an all-white racist jury, mm-hmm. they got another jury, mm-hmm. or they moved towns. This happened to Asada Shakur. Every trial, her jury was all white. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't allow any black jurors, but they moved her from one county to another county. And through a poll, they found out that 70% of the people of that county, it's Middlesex County, mm-hmm. already believed that she was guilty. Mm-hmm. And I heard about the case through the media, mm-hmm. but the judge still like allowed yeah, that case to be tried there. Mm-hmm. And of course she was like guilty of all charges.
Yeah.
There was like a black juror that tried to come forward and say like that I could have been a juror essentially. But they removed me specifically because I was black. And then that person was beat up.
Damn.
So, mm-hmm. and that happened in other cases as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was bias and OD prejudice, and they were all racist, and they all hated her, which did not help. When she was arrested, she was injured because she just got shot. But, you know, when you get arrested and you go to the hospital, you have, like, cops all around you. Mm-hmm. So she's now, at that time, now an accused cop killer. Mm-hmm. An accused cop killer in a room full of cops. So they just constantly beat her. For a while, every time the nurses left the room, the cops would beat her, strike her, kick her, spit on her. And then the nurses come in the room and be like, hey, what's up? To the point where one nurse gave her a call button so that if the cops were to begin to beat her, the call button and the nurses would come in so the cops would stop.
Oh, my God.
The nurses were essentially her only buffer. And there was a question, she did an interview about her imprisonment, and the interviewer asked, is it your opinion that if it were not for the medical staff, the police authorities would have murdered you in the hospital with the complicity and compliance of certain doctors? And she said, that's definitely a possibility. Mm-hmm. So while she was in jail, she was kept in solitary confinement in Rikers for 21 months. And she was kept in solitary confinement for almost her entire sentence or her entire time in jail. Mm-hmm. And I think she was in jail for about 5 or 6 years before she was broken out of jail.
So she was in solitary that whole time?
In and out, but mostly in solitary. Mm-hmm. Because at one point in time, she became pregnant by Kamal Siddiqui, who was also on trial with her.
Mm-hmm.
Who recently was re-imprisoned in like 2008 or something like that for some charges from like the 1970s. And Mm-mm-mm. this is the mother, I mean, the mother, bye. This is the father of her only child, her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
The way that it happened was they were wilding out in court essentially for a really long time. Mm-hmm. Shakur and Siddiqui. They were very outspoken in court, and they would get beat up a lot in court. Or they tried to not beat them up in court because of all the public mm-hmm. Things happening. But then one day they really got fucked up in court. So they locked them in a freezer, essentially, in the courtroom. And at first they weren't locking the door. They were just closing it, and sometimes they would lock it. But it gave them alone time because, you know, she was in solitary for a really long time. So she used this time to reconnect with her friends. And one day, you know, you're alone. You're with somebody.
You're in a freezer.
Yeah, you're in a freezer. You know, nobody's gonna come and get
bow,
that
bow,
ass.
Bow, bow, bow. I can't feel it.
So stupid. So they spoke about it, like not just having sex, having a whole child.
It was planned.
Okay. It was definitely planned. Because I don't, especially in that kind of mindset, I don't think that, you know, like that instant, not instant pleasure, but they wanted to see past just the initial pleasure. Like, what can we do to lead, make a really big impact? Like, how can we really like turn shit up?
Yeah.
And she was afraid, but she said she felt like she had to live and quote unquote, because our children are our futures. And I believe in strength and the righteousness or the rightness of our struggle. Mm-hmm. So she did become pregnant by him, which the courts and the judge were like, houseway.
Immaculate conception.
Facts. She said she was going to say some shit like that. Like, this is like God's Black Panther baby inside of me. Like, I didn't have to. I was like, damn, you should have did that shit. That shit was crazy, but drove everybody insane. But, you know, the shitty part about that, having a baby in jail as a political prisoner, is that of course you're gonna get really shitty medical attention. So at first she was feeling queasy. She was telling her aunt, who also was her lawyer, like, I'm sick, I don't know what's going on, I might be pregnant. So she would hint to the doctors, like giving them those basic pregnancy symptoms, like, my stomach's getting bigger, I'm feeling nauseous, I'm feeling
my period's not coming.
My period's not coming. That wasn't enough for a while in order for her to get a pregnancy test. They finally tested her urine multiple times and found out she was pregnant, and they still didn't tell her. She found out through the courts, essentially, that she was pregnant. She didn't know. Well, she knew, but she didn't have that official, like, because think about it, like, who would think that they would actually, like, that she would actually work, like, you'd actually get pregnant in the back of a fucking courtroom. Badass shit. But when she gave birth, like, they wouldn't let her breastfeed the baby. They said that she needed a prescription from her doctor.
A prescription?
Literally a prescription. Because
is that a thing?
No, it's not a fucking thing. Hell no. But it was them. Like, a lot of her struggle was not just the physical abuse, but, like, that mental abuse to make her life as difficult as possible. So she got a prescription,
your
though.
Human rights.
Facts. Like, the basic human rights to breastfeed your baby when you just give birth to them. But she got the prescription, so she was able to breastfeed, at least for a little bit. But when she came home, you know, it was a very abrupt way that they took her away from her baby. So more than likely, even though she didn't say it directly, she probably was suffering from postpartum depression. And she wanted to go back to solitary confinement. But they wanted to give her an examination, and she refused examination, which is your legal right. And then she was jumped by 4 large female correction officers.
I'm sorry, they wanted to give her an examination for what?
Like a physical examination.
After birth?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But she wanted to be alone. Because she probably was low-key struggling with, like, suicide.
And when you said
stuff.
She came home, you meant after the hospital.
Not home. I meant that's
went to the prison. I just wanted to see.
That's why I was like, who's giving who an examination? But after she had the baby and was put back into her jail cell.
Yes, and put back in, she went back
into
to jail.
The system.
She went back to Rikers.
And then, of course, the child was taken and given to somebody else.
Yeah, given. I think her mother took custody of that child.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, the child was raised by her family, not, like, in the system or anything.
That might not even be. Was it postpartum? It could have just been like, I don't really fuck with you niggas. Like, I just don't want to be around
anyone. Well, she said that
anyone.
She was feeling depressed.
Oh, okay.
Specifically, she was feeling depressed. Which I can completely, like, see that, because you have your baby and it's like, wow, this is, like, my struggle baby. And then you were just, like, chilling them, like, away from the baby, and they're like, all right, let's go. And
is
you
that
didn't
postpartum,
get to
though? Or is that just depression?
Yeah, there's... To tease that out, you'd have to, because her circumstances and her condition... contribute to the depression as well. You're in prison.
Yeah.
You're having a baby.
And
you're
not going to
take your baby's going to be taken away, which you kind of already knew. I can't say it was an onset right after having the baby, which is what postpartum depression is. But
yeah, I mean,
we're
I
not diagnosing
maybe.
Nobody. Yes,
it could have been.
It was
either
depression.
Way, she
at
was
least.
Depressed. The bare minimum, she was depressed. And main point is that she got jumped by some big ass.
And why did they do that?
Because she wouldn't get an examination.
Okay.
A lot of that was, like, anytime she refused anything, she would be physically harmed.
Okay.
So that was them trying to force her to get an examination.
Okay. And they wanted to give her a medical exam, you said?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
And eventually, like, one of the CEOs, like, delivered a letter. I forgot exactly what it said, but it's saying that her aunt said, go see a doctor. So she finally saw a doctor. While she was pregnant, she was left in a cell with inmates who had pneumonia.
Oh boy.
Who were suffering from seizures from methadone withdrawal.
Yeah.
And one person had confirmed tuberculosis. But she was left in that cell these people. And then after she gave birth, she was left in the infirmary on a mattress, like essentially shackled for like 2 weeks. I don't think she was Muslim per se, but she didn't eat pork. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the food that they served was pork or was just extreme trash, so she wasn't eating as well. I think she was, because she was celebrating Ramadan. But then
they
food that
pork
they,
so much in prison, that's just kind of weird.
No, they serve her pork.
Yes.
Oh, they're purposely
serve pork in general, yeah. But that was
another tactic.
That's a tactic for black activists, because most of them were Muslim or just in general didn't eat pork, like refused to eat pork. Mm-hmm. That is definitely a matter of intimidation as well. Mm-hmm. She escaped. She escaped jail with the help of about 4 different people, 2 of them being women. Neither of the women being people of color, which I thought was very interesting. One of the women who helped her escape was Marilyn Jean Buck, who was like a Marxist revolutionary. Mm-hmm. She was a feminist poet, and she was in prison for her participation in 1979, the 1979 escape. And also there was a Brinks robbery in 1981 and a 1983 U.S. Senate bombing. Like these, they were going hard for respect. And she received an 80-year sentence, but she had uterine cancer. So she was released one month in July of 2010. And then she died in August 2010 from cancer-related complications. And the second woman was Silvia Baraldini. She was an Italian activist who ended up being extradited back to Italy to serve out the remainder of her sentence. But other countries know that being arrested in America during that time was like a lot of bullshit. So they released her, and America was tight. She didn't serve her whole sentence. She did house arrest, and then eventually she was, like said, time served. But she was also arrested for helping free Asashikura, as well as conspiring to commit armed robberies.
That's one of the things I don't understand, though. Not to like shit on the movement, but they were actually committing these robberies and things like that. Mm-hmm. So why is it bullshit in other countries? Like, it's not, they actually were committing crimes. Yes. In theory, they should
technically, but
be in prison.
The thing about it is that, like, how we look at crimes committed in the black community as they're not just crimes being committed, they're crimes in response.
Yeah.
So
I get that too, but like, do these countries actually care?
I don't think they do. This wasn't like Cuba per se as well.
No, I'm saying, but are these countries even for the cause? Because I don't think that they are. Because they're oppressive to their people as well. So it's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
But they just might not fuck with America in general.
That's what I think it really is.
I think a lot of your enemy is your friend.
Yeah. I'm going to shit on you. Because I can, because I have your people, and thank you for giving me back my people, and I can do what I want with them now. Mm-hmm. But Cuba did.
Yeah.
Cuba offered political asylum to Assad Shakur in 1984. That's where she's remained since. And she felt that, well, Angela Davis felt that Cuba was a country that didn't suffer from racism. That's what Angela Davis felt. I'm pretty sure that's not the truth, but maybe even at the time, that's what it appeared to be, because racism was so bad in America that a country that just had like colorism issues on the surface. Apparent surface or whatever, that it didn't seem like such a real deep issue. So she's been living there, and there's been a whole lot of extradition efforts to get her out of Cuba that clearly have failed, because she's still there. Notably Obama, who everybody loves just so much, who's trash. He listed Assad Shakur as the most wanted terrorist in
2013.
I know that's on the top of my head, but he did lists her as one of the most wanted terrorists and the first woman to be on that list. And this was after Angela Davis praised him for having black radical ideals. And then she was like, just kidding. So, and considering, especially him being a black president, hearing that happen had a lot of implications for her. It's like, damn, I'm really not safe. In 1998, There was an extradition effort, and Maxine Waters, who was a Congressional Black Caucus representative in California, accidentally, as well as many other people, accidentally signed.
How do you accidentally sign?
Because, okay, I'm going to read this to you. There was an open letter that she wrote to Castro, Fidel Castro, and she said that many members, including herself, were against Assad Shakur's extradition because they had mistakenly voted for the bill, which was placed on an accelerated suspension calendar, generally reserved for non-controversial legislation. In the letter, Waters explained her opposition, calling COINTELPRO illegal, clandestine, political persecution. With all of this, like, and COINTELPRO essentially bugging everything, she couldn't have any conversations. She didn't really want to meet with people in public. She had to isolate herself from her family. COINTELPRO was so successful in what they did, which is scary because it really is still used, and you should definitely be careful if you're an activist, because it's possible. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you for that summation.
You're welcome.
What is Asada doing now? Like, what is she doing in Cuba?
She's written two books so far. She wrote her autobiography, and then she wrote another book about following her life after her prison escape in Cuba. I didn't read the other one because I didn't really know about it until very recently, because these books are like Black Panther pamphlets almost, so they're treated as such. And I know that she does still do activism. She does speak about activism going on in America. I know she's spoken about Black Lives Matter, but there's still like not that much she can do, because you don't want to push it too far where, because there's like $3 million or $2 million bounty for her. So you got to be careful.
Yeah.
Because it's not like Guantanamo Bay is far. They pull your ass right in there, because we don't really care about laws in America. Oh, and by the way, one of my middle names is Asada, so I love this name so much. I was like, can y'all call me that? So people call me that for literally 2 days, and I was like, all right, just kidding. I don't want to do this anymore.
Cool. Okay. Are we moving on to the great Angela Davis?
Yes, we are.
I was going to say late and great.
No, she's definitely not late. A lot late. No, so don't kill her. No.
The late and great.
Because it goes together so quickly. Angela Yvonne Davis. I love these Black names. Thank you, mama. Love it. If you don't know, she's a political activist. She is an author, a professor. She was born in Birmingham, Alabama.
Racist.
Racist?
Yeah.
Birmingham.
Oh, the place.
Yeah, not Davis.
Yeah, Davis.
I thought you were just saying Akua was racist.
Like, no.
You just assumed that Birmingham, she was born Alabama in Birmingham.
Birmingham is racist. All right.
But I say that all the time, and everybody's like, why are you shitting on Alabama?
No, you shit on our listeners.
Yeah. No, I don't.
The coolest in Alabama. We got listeners in Alabama.
She said, fuck those listeners. I swear she did.
I don't remember saying that.
See, that's why.
I didn't say that. Continue.
Okay. Her family lived in Dynamite Hill, which is named that for the amount of bombings that happened by the KKK during the 50s, and drove middle class people to move out because we're not trying to die out here. So she was a member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee during her undergrad and graduate years. She was a member of the Black Panther Party and a member of the American Communist Party. And she did a lot of activist work for the improvement of prisons conditions for inmates. She was a strong supporter of the Soledad Brothers, which were three inmates who of the Soledad prison. And they were accused of killing a prison guard after several inmates were killed during a fight. This is when things get a little murky for Davis. So she was a strong supporter of these inmates, and it was well known. She did a lot of activism work on it.
Who were these brothers and what were they on trial for?
Okay, so they were on trial for killing a prison guard. And the younger brother, who was free, I think he was like 17.
Yes,
he was really young. And he wanted them to be free. So it was like Free Soldat Brothers. So it was an escaped attempt where they had like a van and everything. So they were breaking out. So the judge was killed. And then they were all killed as well in the chase. Mm-hmm. I don't think they made it very far at all. Mm-hmm. And then that's when they discovered all the weapons and all the weapons, not all of them, at least the shotgun specifically being registered to Angela Davis.
And that she bought it. She had bought it like several days.
2 days before.
So that was the implication.
Did she buy it for them?
No. So that part,
that's what I'm unclear about.
Yeah, she would never admit to that. But also, yeah. Just the buying of the weapons wasn't enough to implicate her in the crime. Because it's just the weapon, even though nowadays that's absolutely not the case. Mm-hmm. But it was a registered weapon. But they just found it was insufficient evidence to implicate her that she had anything to do with the murder. Mm-hmm.
Who were these people, the Soledad brothers? I'm sorry.
It's the Soledad brothers because of Soledad Prison.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's not their last name.
Yeah, no. Okay. And they were charged with killing a prison guard.
In the prison. They were just in jail. That was not a political act.
No.
Gotcha.
That was an act of get my people out of jail.
Okay, which in theory could be a political act if you think about like the Seneca uprisings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But...
And their brother wanted them to be free.
Yes.
And that's why he staged this. How did he know Angela Davis?
So it was rumored that her and George Jackson, the brother, the inmate, were lovers.
Okay.
Is that not true?
I have no idea. I don't know.
It was rumored that they knew each other, being that she supported them. I guess they were in talks. I don't know if they were lovers.
And I think that one of them was a Black Panther Party member. Okay. It's not like they were just random ass Black people. Okay. They were also political activists as well.
Yeah, gotcha.
Which is why I think that trial was so, it was controversial to them because they didn't, as far as what they say, they didn't do it. Mm-hmm. They were just implicated in it because a lot of things would happen in prison. And it's like, cool, we want the people who have the most influence to go down for it.
Yeah.
So that we don't have uprising in these jails. That's why a lot of them are kept in solitary confinement. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So, of course, a warrant went out for her arrest and she fled California, wound up in New York City, and then was arrested in October, I believe, by FBI agents. They found her somewhere in New York City, which means they probably used their COINTELPRO tactics to find her. Mm-hmm. So she was in prison. She was held in the Women's Detention Center. And was segregated in solitary confinement, like Rob said. Mm-hmm. And she was there for a substantial time. I believe it was like most of her imprisonment. She was in solitary confinement.
How long was her imprisonment?
I believe it was like 18 months, 16 to 18 months.
Okay.
I won't say all of it, but most likely a majority of it. Mm-hmm. She was in solitary confinement. Then with her legal team was moved out of the solitary confinement.
Mm-hmm. That's what I mean by that kind of like privilege. Other people didn't have power like that. They put in these motions, but they would all get stopped.
Why did Angela Davis have more privilege?
I think because she was such a progressive leader. Like she wasn't just a member of the Black Panther Party. She was a leader in it. She also had communist support. Mm-hmm. She had like funding from other countries.
Which helps you with a better legal team if you have funding.
The John Lennon made a song about her to help fund for her her like bail and stuff. She had a wealthy person donate $100,000 after they were able to release her for bail. Mm-hmm. Somebody donated that money.
And funds raised by United Presbyterian Church. You know how Black people get together. They like to give money.
But
so it was just a lot of funds that wasn't accessible to other people.
No. Mm. Not everybody.
Why did she get so many funds?
Notoriety. People somebody made a song.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, how did, why was she more notarized than?
Angela Davis was also considered very beautiful. She was very,
she was high yellow.
Yes. Very, very, very fair skinned, in comparison
colorism
to Asajj Shakur. Mm-hmm. So I think that it might definitely didn't have everything to do with it. She also had, a higher, like a lot of education. Mm-hmm. So met a lot of people.
Okay. Yeah.
But also she was like physically attractive, which is why, they wanted, I mean, Asajj Shakur as well, they wanted to demonize him in a way that they wouldn't be as attractive, because an attractive person you'd be more sympathetic to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, because that was weird for me. I'm like, damn, I see like this struggle. Even though they still all had love for each other, it wasn't like, this person got this and I didn't get this and I've had to struggle. Mm-hmm. It was just, it was a different kind of struggle, because the struggle that she went through for a long time in general.
That is interesting.
Yes, it is.
So with those funds and those these other privileges, being able to change venues for your trial to a different county, kind of helped her case. An all-white jury, because they just will not let black people
be jurors.
On these jurors.
Black people for black people is a no.
Found her not guilty of all of her charges, and I will find her charges. So she was charged with aggravated kidnapping and first-degree murder of the judge, of the death of the judge. Aggravated.
She was charged with first-degree murder of the judge?
Just because of the weapon.
Yeah. That makes no sense.
They tried it. They tried it a lot.
You know, in Asada's case, you said that that guy had actually shot the police officer, right? Mm-hmm. Was he also charged with murder?
Yes.
So they, how can two people be charged with murder?
They still do it to this day. Because, like Rob says...
But doesn't it have to be different degrees of it or something like that?
I don't know. That part, I'm not sure.
That is the decision of the DA, but... If they decide that everybody's doing first degree murder, you know, they take that to court and they gamble that. If the jury was like, no, maybe it should be lessened down to second degree or whatever the degrees are. Mm-hmm. And then do they retry it? I don't know how the legal system works.
Well, I know that in a lot of these cases, it's that it's really guilty by association.
Mm-hmm.
So even though she wasn't there, she wasn't anywhere near that courtroom. Just the fact that the weapons were registered to her name, it's as if she pulled the trigger herself.
And the
which
way
is pretty unconstitutional.
That seems like at least should be conspiracy.
Yeah, but nah, they just went straight for the big guns and failed, because clearly it wasn't a very strong, prosecution. Mm.
The way I understand it in my head is that like it's a law that if a felony is committed while you're committing another crime, you get charged with that felony. Even if you didn't do it. So if you're like the getaway driver and someone's robbing a bank, which is a felony, you are now a felon. Like, you're charged with that rather than to grand larceny or something.
I see.
Oh, no. Wrong things.
I didn't know what that meant. I was just like, I see.
You're guilty by association, basically.
I understand that, yeah. Thank you.
What did she do after not being found guilty? I think she went back to teaching.
That's kind of funny.
But it's more like she taught, but she also like traveled all over Earth. Like, no, seriously,
she
though.
Moon too.
She did go to the moon. She was putting communism on the moon. You already know. The moon is a communist social republic. She's not associated with the Communist Party anymore. It's like the Democratic Socialist Party, which is, you know, slightly different. But she... She just traveled a lot and doing a lot of that work, doing lectures overseas and just taking part of different events, different communist events. But are you gonna, you want me to talk about the COINTELPRO?
Yes.
So she is also one of those people that when you search COINTELPRO, you find Angela Davis. She was directly targeted by the FBI because of her political power within the black activist groups. She was an assistant professor at UCLA under Leon Letwin. If you search Leon Letwin, you find like a gabillion COINTELPRO documents. And through COINTELPRO, also with the help of Ronald Reagan, who was like the governor at the time before he was president.
Of California.
Yes. They had her fired from her position because of her political beliefs, but she was reinstated because they found that it wasn't enough to fire her just because she was associated with the Communist Party. But then she actually did get fired because she was like, pigs! Pigs, fucking pigs. But she was followed, taps. There were false, like proper, like a lot of propaganda about her just to discredit her. Mm-hmm. And I'm, a lot of that is like, it just reminds me so much of the Black Lives Matter, specifically when it comes to her, because there's so much media attention to discredit all mm-hmm. the movements, you know, labeling her as a terrorist. And being a communist at that time was like, it was so bad.
Mm-hmm. Probably the worst thing you could
yeah, be called. Yeah, it's worse than being part of the Black Panther. So mm-hmm. being both mm-hmm. was just like, the government hated her. Mm-hmm. And she didn't care. She would tell people openly, I'm a communist, and I'm a feminist, mm-hmm. and I'm a Black rights activist. It was so much power in her words that she just created entire movements no matter where the hell she went. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she was definitely directly affected by COINTELPRO. Even Asada Shakur wrote about her imprisonment, false imprisonments mm-hmm. Due to COINTELPRO. Yeah, it's real life shit, but she never went underground. Mm. She definitely stayed up.
But maybe that was that like her privilege to do so.
Yes, mm-hmm. it definitely yeah. was her privilege to do so. Especially if you don't have financial support, you have to go underground because mm-hmm. you wouldn't have the money to keep up the facade if mm-hmm. you wanted to just like disappear. Going underground is cheap because mm-hmm. you just disappear off Earth. But she could stay up and she had protection at mm-hmm. that. A lot of people didn't have protection. People mm-hmm. weren't going to risk the movement in order to protect the person.
Yeah,
but being a leader, yeah, it's so complicated.
Mm-hmm. And who is this Leon Letwin?
Leon Letwin was a professor at UCLA who was also a communist, but he was associated with a lot of these political movements that were against the FBI's intent. Mm-hmm. So they followed him and surveilled him in order to gather information to have him fired as well, even though that didn't work.
So was she just caught in the uptake of that, or were they
caught
also
in the uptake? But also it was a separate thing because of her own separate
identity.
Yeah, her mm-hmm. own separate identity.
I got you.
But as I said, well, I guess I didn't tell the viewers, it's hard to search these documents because they're like PDFs, essentially. They're mm-hmm. like pictures, so you can't like control F them. But if you search Leon Letwin, COINTELPRO shows up. If you search Anna Davis, COINTELPRO shows up in articles, but not in actual documents.
Mm-hmm. So his name was in the documents.
Yeah, yes. He was in the documents. And I was like, damn. Who the fuck is Leon Letwin? I was like, oh. And then when you read it, you start to see like mentioning of her, but not by name. And I'm sure there
the
might be a document.
Big light skin afro that he rolls with.
The light skin afro.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And I tried to like search pictures, like mm-hmm. To see if I could see her name in documents, but that shit is hard. They yeah. did not make it easy, even though they made it real. But the COINTELPRO documents are also super redacted.
Yeah,
if some of them are almost all blacked out.
Yeah, I don't get that in terms of like how the government works. Like, how are things redacted? Like, why is it legal to redact certain things?
I guess
what
you
is
could,
the basis of redacting things?
You could say that. If I release this information right now, even if this is unclassified, this information could affect national security. Mm-hmm. Even if that's not the case. But it's like if you found out that we killed Martin Luther King Jr., that would threaten, it would technically, it would threaten national security because niggas would turn absolutely up. So they would use that justification to redact a lot of
but
things that were made public.
Isn't it a threat to national security when the government can kill leaders?
No, yeah.
So I'm just, what is the actual argument?
It's no rational argument. That's their argument. So that's why there's certain documents where there's literally like a word that's not redacted. And it's like, why are you here? But they're like, we were legally obligated to give this to you. And we gave it to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But even still, even with it being a lot of it being redacted or like almost fucking rescinded.
There is still a lot of information out
there. So much. It's like, it's painful. Like mm-hmm. the first time I read COINTELPRO was about, they wanted to shut down, because you know, Black Panther Party opened schools. Mm-hmm. So there's one school that they wanted to shut down. So it's like these documents aren't just like, here's a plan. It's a working plan. So it's surveillance. It's here are proposed letters, proposed cartoons, proposed propaganda, proposed conversations. Here are the effects. Uh-huh. So they wanted to shut down the school. So the proposed plan was to send in a fire warden and to say that the school didn't have a proper fire plan. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't have enough doors, mm-hmm. or they didn't have enough staircases.
The exits aren't marked properly.
Exactly. And, you know, that's a big infraction. Mm-hmm. So that's what they did. And it worked. It didn't work for long, but it worked. And they shut down the school. Or another one I read was them trying to say that the schools were ineffective, or that the breakfast program was ineffective. Like, just anything that they can think of to discredit, and then write it as if it's a black person. Like, they wrote to a Jewish center as a black person, saying that they're going to, this Black Panther chapter is going to release these, anti-Semitic cartoons. Can you help us? Like, it's just creating, like, ultimate riffs, and they really did it well.
Should we talk about Nikki Giovanni now?
Yes.
Okay, so if you don't know Nikki Giovanni, she is an famed African-American poet, professor, wonderful, wonderful person. And in 1968, she wrote, in a series of her very black-ass poems, she wrote a poem entitled A Short Essay of Affirmation Explaining Why, with apologies to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Mm. We have time to read it. Honky's always talking about black folks walking down the street, talking to themselves. They say we're high or crazy. But recent events have shown we know who we're talking to. That little microphone in our teeth, between our thighs, or any place that may have needed medical attention. Recently, my mail has been stopped, and every morning when I awake, I speak to the lessee in the wall who bangs behind my whole rap. This is a crazy country. They use terms like psychosis and paranoid with us, but we can't be black and not be crazy. How the hell would anyone feel with a mechanical dick in their ass, in his ass, lightening the way for Whitey? And we're supposed to jack off behind it? Well, I'm pissed off. They ain't getting inside my bang or my brain. I'm into my black bang, and it's filling all my empty spots. Sorry about that, Miss Hoover.
In reference to J. Edgar Hoover's wife?
Yes.
Or is she calling J. Edgar Hoover a woman?
We will talk about that. Go back to the document.
Because, you know.
Find me the document.
Yeah, there's some queerness, there queer allegations.
Yes. So, Miss Giovanni's poem is basically, well, first, the subtitle is a nod to the fact that the FBI will be reading it because they're everywhere. They're infiltrating.
They're listening to this podcast first, you know, as we're recording it.
So that, can you edit it too?
That was it. And she's basically affirming that, you know, black people are not crazy. They know they're being watched. They know they're being surveilled. They know that the FBI is infiltrating them and bugging their houses and bugging their phones. And that's why it seems like they're talking to themselves. No, they might really be talking to the FBI agent. Kind of like how we're like, oh, the FBI's in my laptop and I talk to him every day. Y'all see the memes.
Those are my favorite, too. Because I'm like, facts. When the FBI be showing up at your door after you get broken up, we're like, no, you good, fam.
That was the reality of the people in the 60s, these activists in the 60s. The FBI was, you know, listening in on them.
Mm-hmm.
And the poem was to validate the paranoia behind that. They're not psychotic. They're not high. And white people should not be trying to rumor this or discredit them using allegations of mental illness and substance abuse, because these are the real things that are happening in the black community, in the black activist community. So this was my favorite part. The part about the mechanical dick and
some real shit.
And even just saying, like, there are cameras in places that need to be reached medically was written in a paper that I should source, was just like kind of like a metaphorical suggestion that the FBI had like sadistic sexual gratification for harassing black people. Like, that's how they got their rocks off. And also that it was rumored. I didn't know this until reading and researching it, that J. Edgar, what is it? I don't know these white people's names.
J. Edgar Hoover.
Him. He engaged in homosexual behavior. I cannot call him a homosexual because I don't know how he identified.
Men who sleep with men.
Yes. So that was also a nod to, or kind of a poke at him. Like, you like to stick your dick in our asses. This is how you get your rocks off. You jack off to these people harassing us.
This reminds me of going to see the man, going to meet the man, James Baldwin. Mm-hmm. The last short story in his book, Going to Meet the Man. And that story was specifically about a cop who raped black suspects, mm-hmm. Who he arrested, mm-hmm. but he physically got a hard on after almost stomping a black man to death. He had an erection, and he recalls his first time watching a lynching with his family. So that story was to visually portray the fact that white masculinity depends on the emasculation of the black man, mm-hmm. and also just the physical and mental abuse of the black woman. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, the fact that everybody be coming to the same idea, it's mm-hmm. like, clearly it's not, you're not crazy.
Yep. That is intense.
It is intense.
But yes, that was Mrs. Giovanni's.
To publicly put it out into the world.
Yes, that.
In a way that it can be received by more people than just like talking
news.
About it.
Mm-hmm. Like a lecture. That's why I fuck with black artists.
Like making like music about it.
Black artists are a part of the movement.
Like a moral technique and shit. Mm-hmm. Out here. I mean, it's, I don't know. I just appreciate it. I wanted to include it in there, especially because A, it's like a poem that not a lot of people like would know about. I didn't know about
apparently
it.
It's not very accessible, right? Cool.
No. Not unless you have the book or you're in academia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, because a lot of the stuff is like, you don't know about it. You don't know what you don't know until you find out you didn't know it. Mm-hmm. And like, even now, black people be wild paranoid. Like, yo, don't talk about that on the phone. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that in person. Like, who is this person?
What are we drinking? What are we eating?
Yeah, like, what is this? We question everything. Mm-hmm. Just like we question medical professionals because of the history mm-hmm. of torture, the history of deception, the history of just blatantly killing people mm-hmm. or rendering them infertile mm-hmm. just for own personal gains. Mm-hmm. So this poem is saying, like, this is another part where you're going to try to tell us that we're crazy, that we're looking over our shoulders, that we're insane, but this is something that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that when, you know, this was 1968, COINTELPRO wasn't discovered until 1971. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure after it came out, they were like, people were like, oh, I get it. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, now we're really not crazy. Even Nikki Giovanni said this shit was happening and mm-hmm. we wasn't really listening. Mm-hmm. But now we got this document to substantiate everything. Mm-hmm. You have to start somewhere. That's why I'm so appreciative of this Black History Month run through, because there's so many things and so many people that I didn't realize that I didn't know.
Yeah.
And now I have somewhere to start. Mm-hmm. And it's so much information that you can't expect anybody to be an expert on anything, like, until they're like 90. Like, I've read all the autobiographies and I've read all the COINTEL documents. It's so much that you have to research in order to become well-rounded in this whole thing. Like, I'm just starting. I couldn't give you a synopsis of Angela Davis like I just gave you Sadiq Shakur, because mm-hmm. that took forever. Mm-hmm. It took years, really, for me to gather all of that information mm-hmm. and put it out there. Like, we're not just a podcast about sex, love, and dating. Because mm-hmm. we're also Black feminists and we have a lot to say. Mm-hmm. And it all ties together because, like, Angela Davis isn't married and Asa Shakur isn't married. Mm-hmm. And I know Asa Shakur isn't married because of gender roles. She was so busy trying to make something of herself that she couldn't be like that domesticated woman that her husband wanted her to be. So she wasn't cooking.
Oh, that guy, Chimard or whatever?
Yeah. She wasn't cooking, she wasn't cleaning, and he had this dynamic of him being the breadwinner and his wife being like the homemaker. And mm-hmm. she's like, nah, I'm the breadwinner too, bro. I got people to free. Mm-hmm. And they ended up divorced. In her whole autobiography, this nigga had one paragraph. One.
Damn, imagine.
That's how insignificant it was.
Well, thank you, Rob and Akua, for putting together that.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, mostly Rob, for putting together that woman lens of COINTELPRO, and also just telling us about COINTELPRO, because honestly I didn't really know that much. And then also shout out to Rodeca, who did do a piece about someone else who's affected by COINTELPRO, Mae Mallory. Unfortunately, because Rodeca could not make it and we didn't feel comfortable spouting her research for her. That is not in the episode, but maybe we can do like a little Twitter thread about it later in the week. So look out for that. Hope you guys are enjoying the Black History Month. That we're doing for you.
Whole month. Yeah. Whole 28 days.
Next week is going to be something pretty cool too. We'll end the show now.
Stay Black forever.
All right. That.
Wakanda forever.
If you guys would like to follow us. Oh my God. Nobody can even see it, but it was amazing. If you guys would like to follow us on social media, you can do so by following at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inaho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. Go to InahoUprising.com to pay a hoe and check out merchandise. You guys can follow me, Aku, at Hey Aku Girl, HeyAkuaGirl on Instagram and Twitter.
I'm Pan-African.
Seems stupid now. Like, oh yeah, we really fuck with this person. They know so much about Black history. A real movement leader.
How do we find them?
What's your Twitter name?
Excuse me.
Let's start with Twitter. Let's just warm up. I'm Rob the underscored underscored.
Underscored God.
I'm so nervous to say my IG name. Rob the underscore God at Twitter, and I'm panafrican.buddhist.
No, but that's the epitome of this show, okay? It is both insightful and silly.
Yes. And I mean, that's great. I'm just inclusive of all booty scratchers, including myself.
No, it's not all booty scratchers, okay? We're not gonna, I was gonna spoil Black Panther, but we are only the Pan-African diaspora.
Oh, yeah, the Pan-African diaspora.
I don't care about European booty scratchers.
Oh,
okay?
Yes. Okay, I meant I'm African booty scratchers.
Yes.
Samantha.
I'm SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter. You can find all that in the description for this episode. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.